Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Inspire small business.
We can teach these barbarians a lesson in Western methods and efficiency that will put them to shame.
He tells it like it is.
I realize how difficult it's going to be in this godforsaken place where you can't find what you need. And there's the challenge.
He's Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate.
With all due respect, sir, I believe this is going to be our finest hour.
We're back. It's 34 after. Thank you very much for joining me. Thanks for being part of my day. It's my pleasure to have you hang out with me today. And if you just tuned in, welcome aboard. We're glad to have you here. I think you're going to have a good time, especially now that Bob Seidensticker is with us. Bob's back for another visit. He is a former employee of Microsoft, a graduate of MIT. That tells you right away that he's pretty smart guy, and the author of an outstanding book called Future Hype, The Myths of Technology Change. He's our friend Bob. Welcome to the show.
Morning, Jim.
It's good to have you here.
Yeah, it's great to be here again.
It's good to have you back, as always. It's been too long. We don't need to go this long without having you back on the show.
You're absolutely right.
You know, Bob, one of the things we're doing today is we're kind of couching everything that we do around the anniversary of this day of infamy, 9/11, when we were attacked. And the terrorists then and now are and I wrote about this in my column this week, and have written about it in the past. It's ironic, I think, that the terrorists are radical Islamic followers who basically their worldview is to take, they would prefer that we all would go back to basically first millennium AD, a world like that. And yet the irony is they have no problem using 21st century technology to fulfill their obligation. So here's my question to you, Bob. If the terrorists should actually win, do you really think that they would just abandon all technology and let it all rust down? Or do you think that they'd kind of get hooked on it a little bit? What do you think?
Well, you know, the amazing thing here, the real irony, is when you look back at the history of Islam, you find a golden age of Islam. It was about 500 years long. It was centered around the year 1000. So at a time when...
Extended to Europe, too, didn't it?
It eventually did, and that set the stage for the Renaissance. But, of course, at a time when Europe was in the Dark Ages, medieval period, in Islam they were developing algebra, and that's where we get our Arabic numerals, medicine, yep, chemistry, astronomy, some amazing things. Cordoba in Moorish Spain was maybe the largest city in the world at the time. It had a library. I've heard one library had as many books in it as all of Europe had. So, you know, really on the vanguard of education, really appreciated this, really encouraged other cultures. Of course, it was a very big empire at the time, very diverse.
Medicine, I mean, at one point in time, Baghdad was the center of learning, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, if you look at different parts in different parts of the world throughout history, you find, you know, China, even, you know, Middle America, parts of Africa had you know, empires, you know, flower and then fade away. But it's really interesting and very relevant, I think, that Islam, the Arab area, had this amazing empire, and they embraced learning, they embraced technology, science. So it's
holds
out some hope for us that kind of flowering is still possible.
But yet, Bob, we don't see it. I mean, we're not seeing it from the Arab nations. We're not seeing them, you know, deny some of this stuff. I mean, they sort of are against the terrorists, but they're not really all that forthcoming with their denouncements. They haven't actually become, you know, Saudi Arabia hasn't exactly become a center of learning or culture. Certainly hasn't made any cultural changes to any great degree. It's there's a lot of irony there, isn't there?
There is. At the same time, and again, maybe we're seeing some of this you know, spark of change for the better. If you look at countries like Qatar or Bahrain or some of these smaller countries, you know,
right.
maybe a little bit outside of the you know, Islamic fervor and that
right.
kind of thing. Bahrain, as I understand it, they're trying to create almost a, you know, kind of a high-tech Disneyland as a
right.
destination stop. Europeans is the main focus, obviously, but you know,
and look at what's happening in Dubai, which is part of the United Arab Emirates, UAE.
There we go. Good
yeah.
point. Good example.
Dubai is a beacon for that area. So, but those are small areas. I mean, Bahrain is a small island, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we got more to talk about with our good friend Bob Seatensticker, the author of Future Hype. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Jim Blasek. We're back. It's 17 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. We're visiting with our good friend Bob Seatensticker, a member of our Brain Trust, the author of Future Hype, The Myths of Technology Change. And, Bob, we were talking about some of the ironies of our modern world today as we fight terrorism. We fight terrorism effectively with technology, and we have to try to stay, you know, one step ahead of them. I know there's a... In the technology security world, folks, there's a term called zero day. Bob, I know you know what that means. And zero day basically is where whenever someone creates a bomb or some kind of a, I say bomb, I didn't mean to say use that term. I shouldn't have used it for this application. A virus or something like that turns into a bomb on your computer. Basically, when anybody creates something like that to wreak havoc with you and sends it out there to be proliferated, the goal of the security sector of technology industry, Bob, is to be able to defeat that in the first day, on the day that it's released. They call that basically, if my understanding, Bob, they call that zero day, and so that's what our terrorist fighting apparatus does, is they try to have a zero day type of jump on these folks, don't they?
They do indeed. Yeah, I think it's interesting looking back at technology. The movement from a civilian technology into a military technology, when the telegraph was first introduced, it was seen as a huge instrument of peace. I remember mm-hmm. an interesting quote: Austria feels greater security with her extensive telegraph system than if she had an army 10 times the one she commands now.
Wow.
So the idea was, you know, why even bother having an army? Because the whole
and those were 19th century words, weren't they?
Yes, 1854, I think that
yeah.
was.
Yeah.
And the idea was that you know, when somebody is trying to have a surprise attack, why bother? Because you've got your telegraph system. You're going to know who's where and what's happening, and you can, you know, move your forces around very effectively. So surprise attacks are impossible. And of course, you know, you look at the Blitzkrieg and things like that in World War II, which seems to prove that, you know, quite a lie. But
mm-hmm.
the movement of trains during the Civil War into, you know, military applications was, you know, was overnight, and also just the idea of weapons being so terrible they would actually be peaceful was a popular idea back in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of the machine gun, dynamite. The idea was that these are so terrible to even contemplate that people would just say, okay, that's it. You know, we're not fighting that kind
well,
of war.
Well, we actually experienced that during the Cold War, didn't we? Didn't we experience that with the concept of mutually assured destruction? Exactly.
Good
MAD.
Point. Good point. Exactly.
We actually had that because nobody really wanted to blow the other one up because they knew that was a point beyond which we wouldn't return.
Right, and that was the whole idea behind the Star Wars missile defense.
But we don't have that kind. There is no, and see that's the point that I've been trying to make with terrorists. You know, the everything that you've said up to now has been based on the premise that everybody on both sides value life, ultimately. Fundamentally, the default position, the prime directive, is that we value life. The people we're fighting today don't have anything like that. They don't value life of any kind, their own or anybody else, no matter how innocent.
Good point. And also, they're coming, they're fighting as guerrillas. So even in that case, even if
no rules.
Exactly, and to try to shoot bullets into a fog, it's very ineffective, a real challenge.
You know, it reminds me, if you've ever seen a really highly trained, highly skilled, well-oiled basketball team. I mean, this team knows all the plays. They weave and work and pass the ball, move the ball around, all that. You take the best team in the world. And then you have them play a team that has no discipline, but that can shoot, you know, has some talent for shooting the baskets. And the undisciplined team will probably win, because the disciplined team depends on the other team doing what they're doing.
Right, right. Yeah.
This is what we have now. We have a very undisciplined, no rules, no holds barred, no value of life enemy in the terrorists. And we're trying to think of them, you know, the way we think of Russia, our Soviet Union, and that won't work.
And we certainly proved just a few years ago with the takeover of Afghanistan and Iraq that we have a tremendous army for that old war, for fighting the war of the Soviets. You know, it's a frontal assault kind of thing. You know, we are the best, and so that's very good. But you know, that's obviously not the entire war. That only gets you to the first phase.
Bob, you're one of our top technology visionaries. Where do you see technology being in the future to fight the war on terror? What do you think?
Yeah, great question. Just a quick current events thing you probably have heard of. You might have heard that the U.S. has accused China of hacking into some of its computers, some of its military computers. Mm-hmm. And that is certainly another phase of it, that it's things like dirty bombs and anthrax and things that you know were not in the news, you know, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, are now, you know, new ways of seeing how this things might play out. So scary ideas, certainly. In terms of fighting this, I mean, it seems to be just an ongoing arms race. Here again, we have the military term is applied in so many areas in business and so on, and yet we get back to the fundamental actual arms race of what we're talking about here. Mm-hmm. So we can of course work on our frontal assault, but we got to worry about the other things too.
When we come back, I want to get Bob to talk to us about where he thinks technology will lead us in the future with regard to security, for example, at airports. It's 10 till. I'm Jim Blasingame. Bob Seidensticker is our guest. His book is called Future Hype, now in its second printing, ladies and gentlemen. Quick break, 10 till.
Well, I saw a tired car, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again. But I'm so tired of crying, but I'm out on the road again. I'm on the road again.
S-E-I-D-E-N-S-T-I-C-K-E-R. It's not as complicated. It's like Blasingame. It's not as complicated as it sounds. Bob Seidensticker, the author of Future Hype, The Myths of Technology Change. Bob, tell us where your book's available. And give us your website, please.
The website is future-hype.com, and probably Amazon and other online booksellers is the best place to get it.
So check that out. Now it's second printing, right?
You bet.
All right. So, folks, that means it's the first printing sold really well. Bob, we're talking about technology and our war on terror, our fight for survival, basically. I believe that that's where we are. I believe that we have to take this very seriously, that we can't be naive or squeamish about this. We can't be passive about terrorism. I think the only way to defeat terrorism is by being aggressive and letting them know that we're not going to let them win. Terrorism, to me, Bob, is more about what's between our ears than what's blowing up in front of us. What do you think?
I think you're right. That's a great point. It's very often a psychological game.
Mm-hmm.
And we heard the phrase "Don't let the terrorists win" was a common thing spoken just after 9/11. which I think is very, very valid, that if they turn us into them, that's not a good thing. We need to remember who we are and keep that.
The technology that we have has been used against us. They took some very effective and efficient technology tools, some highly technological devices, airplanes, Boeing airplanes, and turned them into missiles, didn't they, Bob? And so that was where our good technology was turned into bad things, wasn't it?
It was. That does touch on the whole topic of technology, good and bad. There was a great quote by Wernher von Braun. He said, "Science does not have a moral dimension. It is like a knife. If you give it to a surgeon or a murderer, each will use it differently." And I think it's very much like how technology is. It's very much a Pandora's box. We can't forget the negative aspect. Technology is never pure and innocent, incorruptible by every possible use, and very often you find ways to divert technology for bad uses.
It's like the marketplace. It's agnostic to and indifferent to our survival, let alone whether we survive or fail or how we use it. And one of the things, Bob, I've always said, especially since 9/11, is that evil is more powerful than good. And because if I wanted to do evil today, I could do a lot more damage than I could do than good things if I decided just to be really good today.
You probably could. I think, though, if you look at the whole altruism question from an evolutionary standpoint, I read just a fascinating article just recently. It's interesting you should mention that. But the idea of how could altruism working together succeed when if you had an altruistic society, all you need is just one bad apple to come in there and say, "Hey, this is terrific. I'll just, there's trust. I'll take advantage of that trust," and so on. And yet, when you think about it, you can take advantage of someone's trust once, and then once the reputation gets around that you're not to be trusted, then people say, "Well, we trust everybody except for that guy."
Right.
So I think that there's some self-correcting mechanisms. So I would hope that we could see things like altruism and noble societies as being resilient.
But that also comes back, Bob, to the notion that we can't be naive about the people that we know are bad and want to hurt us. We can't
That's true.
I mean, they see anything, any kind of capitulation on our part, they see as a weakness. And the only way to defeat those people is to kill them, basically.
Well, you can. That would be the direct approach. I think the other approach, the more subversive approach, which we need to be thinking about also, is trying to find out what incubates terrorists and remove that. Trying to make them more like us. I mean, it's almost like a Marshall Plan kind of idea.
Well, and how you avoid incubating terrorism is by incubating freedom.
That would be one way, and
trade.
Exactly. Yeah, you mentioned trade is a very good point. We've got the focus on China. China's obviously there's a bit of tension there. We talked about the possible hacking into the U.S. computers by Chinese people, and that there's been spying accusations back and forth. And yet, when you think about these two slightly antagonistic countries, the U.S. and China, each one depends so much on the other. So, and that's all because of trade. Trade is bringing them together.
Bastiat said in the 1800s, Frederick Bastiat, the French economist, "When goods cross borders, armies don't." I still believe that. Hey, Bob, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always.
Thank you very much.
We'll see you next time. Bob Seizensticker, ladies and gentlemen. His book is called Future Hype, available wherever books are sold. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, saying God bless America. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, for all you do for us.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.